Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
Dear Diary. I'm so sad, mad, and depressed. I can't remember the last time I was happy. Wait, yes, I can. This morning.
As a teenager, Beth Cozzolino had a lot of opinions, and most of them were about a friend named Sarah.
Dear Sarah, guess who doesn't like you anymore? You are a freak and a terrible student. You're the only person stupid enough to shave your eyebrows because plucking hurts too much. Dear Sarah, I don't get you. How can you be so not a good dresser? How could you possibly wear aqua green sweats with a red bandana and Reeboks? Call the fashion police, I'm serious.
Beth never actually sent her letters. They sat in the pages of her diary, along with her guilt.
Dear Sarah, I'm sorry I wrote that. Please forgive me. Your friend, I hope. Beth.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. Today on the show, our most judgmental episode ever.
Ugh, you would say that.
Kids and critics, those who become them and those who face them. Judgment Day has arrived.
I think I had the fortune and the misfortune of people thinking that I had some sort of wisdom that was beyond my years, like at an early age.
In middle school, Erica Moo was the classic overachiever, which was great for the most part, but it did come with a downside.
I really wish I had been, you know, that young person who could just be the preteen screaming at the boy band concert. I always found it very uncomfortable to allow myself to go there, which is crazy. I was like 12.
I grew up in the San Gabriel Valley, which is just east of Los Angeles. My parents are first-generation immigrants. They were pretty traditional. They wanted me to do well in school, which meant that they didn't really let me leave the house very much. So I spent a lot of time growing up at home watching TV shows and movies by myself. And one of the shows that I used to watch was Siskel and Ebert. These guys were so articulate and authoritative that I wanted to be just like them. So I started writing movie reviews. This binder is about 40 movie reviews I wrote between the ages of 12 and 14 here on Earth. My opinion. Certain romantic movies have a special theme to themselves. Whether it be a twist in a story or an unexpected spark, they somehow manage to set themselves apart from the rest. Unfortunately, I cannot say this about Here on Earth. Even with my little knowledge of what is supposed to happen, I could easily see what was going to happen. Pretty rich boy falls in love with pretty poor girl while she has a boyfriend she's supposed to belong with. They have a little affair, but uh-oh, we find out she's dying. I'm not saying this movie doesn't have its positives. I happen to have a liking for Lily Sobieski. I just wonder why her brains didn't tell her not to do this film. Perhaps if actors were a little smarter, we could save ourselves from movies like this.
A lot of my reviews were very negative, very critical. When it came to writing positive reviews, I was going to gush about a movie, but in a very measured way. I was so uptight, I would say, as a young person that if I liked somebody, I would never write it down. I was like, no one can ever know. No one can ever find any scrap of evidence.
Every Sunday, I would go through the LA Times and cut out photos from the entertainment section to paste onto the reviews. And sometimes movies got a full 4-page spread, like Mission Impossible 2. Now, I clearly had an ulterior motive in putting together these reviews. I basically wanted to cut out photos of hot guys and write about hot guys. So, Mission Impossible 2. My opinion. There are main elements that make an action movie. You've got to have your badass toys and enough explosives to set LA on fire. Many people think that sequels are just cheap movies that try to ride the success of the first in order to make some dinero. But when you have director John Woo in control, you receive a dynamic action movie that is more than expected. Any hot action star would love to be filmed under Woo's direction, creating a slow motion, hotter than hot ideal. I can easily say that any 14-year-old boy had all of his action hormones blown out of the water. Woo used Cruise's raw sexual aura in order to make Hunt more of a fictitious god than a real person. It all adds up to simply woe us. So, if you want a movie that is more action than you can imagine, a proper storyline, amazing shots and choreography, and an extremely talented actor, this movie is for you. If it doesn't sound like the movie for you, perhaps you should get your head checked?
While Erica and Beth harness the power of criticism, other kids aren't as fortunate, especially if they end up on the receiving end.
My freshman year of high school, my mom and my dad divorced, and so we moved to Lake Tahoe. When I first went to this new school, I was terrified. I'd never really ever been the quote-unquote new kid. At first, I was picked on, definitely bullied. I was called faggot the most, and, you know, a million variations of that.
In high school, few kids had more critics than Will Seymour. Avid listeners of the podcast may remember Will from episode 47. And around this time in his life, Will was doing anything he could to escape his harshest critics.
At first, I avoided any contact, you know, by changing my route between classes, sitting in a different place in the classroom. When I started cutting classes, I would hide in the school in different places. And the craziest being, I would go into the theater backstage. They had these huge trunks with costumes and all that. And so I would literally go into the trunk and close the top and stay in there for one or two entire periods. So it could be up to 2 hours, literally in a trunk.
And we moved to Lake Tahoe, and my mother, crazy, got a job working with Liza Minnelli, and who I did not know who that was at the time. And I started high school like 2 weeks late. And so I got beat up, and so I ditched school altogether. And watched a lot of TV and shoplifted, as one does. September 5th, 1980. I really can't stand myself. I hate my body and my insides. I must have cried all afternoon just because of it all. I ditched typing, which is my last class, and I took the bus to Caesar's Casino. I stole a gold lion necklace. I don't know why. December 7th, I hated school today. I've gained two more enemies who can't stand me. One guy did this imitation of me in class and called me a fag, and the teacher didn't do anything about it. The other one said he was going to kick my ass after school. I don't even know him. I don't know anybody. I should have just cut school. December 8th, today I went to school, but I cut PE in my French class. Update, John Lennon was shot in New York today and he died. Mom said Aunt Liza was really upset about the whole thing. I stole two books from Rayleigh's grocery store. I don't know why. December 12th, my English teacher told me that the school is going to do a play. And she's going to be the director, and I should think about auditioning. I think maybe I will. I mean, I was so honored that she took me aside. She was just like that one caring adult for me. So I listened to what she said. I thought I would be incredible in this play because I had been in a choir in middle school before. And in elementary school, I was in The Brave Little Taylor, and I did great. So I was like, I am ready. I thought for sure I would turn my critics around, that they would see this play or hear about the play and this, you know, huge success. I haven't been to school or PE class in 6 days. I walked to Caesar's Casino and I sneaked into the ballroom. They were taping a TV beauty pageant. It had Barbie Benton, Dr. Joyce Brothers, and Dennis Cole as judges. It was really good and really fancy. I hope they don't show me in the audience when it's on TV. I wasn't supposed to be there. January 18th. They made the announcement today about the school play. It's called The Butler Did It. I took a flyer for the auditions. I wish every day was the end of the week. January 20th. I saw My Bodyguard on HBO tonight. It is now my favorite movie of all time. Journal. I wish I knew a guy that was really big that would be my friend and he would beat up all the bad guys at school so they'd stop hurting me. Today I stole a binder and some folders so I can keep organized. I needed it. January 30th, I tried out for The Butler Did It today. I think I did a good job, but I won't know until they post the cast on Monday. I hope I get the lead. February 1st, I made a really good dumpling soup. February 2nd, I got cast in the play. Oh my God. After school, the whole cast read through it together. I play Rick Carlisle, who's supposed to be a mystery writer, and my twin brother. Two roles! I called my grandma and I told her all about it. Journal, oh my God. Dad said he's gonna come up to Lake Tahoe and visit us and see my play. March 6th, at rehearsal today, the director told us that we better vote on having the play go on or not, and it's because people are not taking it seriously. I voted yes. March 11th, oh my God, journal, I'm in the paper today, and there's a picture of me from the play. Okay, so the Tahoe Tribune, the local paper, ran a preview piece. It's like a little article about what the play's about, and it features, a rehearsal shot. But this is really the money right here. Did Butler do it? And it's got my name. I mean, who wouldn't love to be in the newspaper? So all is well in the press. And it kind of went to my head for like a day. March 12th. I've talked to everyone in the play, and all of the cast agrees that Kevin Madden is just not good as my understudy. Whoa! The director, Mrs. Babich, almost kicked him out of the play today because he keeps messing around and not being serious. March 17th, the dress rehearsal tonight was wild. It's like doing the play for real, but no one is there to see it. You guys understand, right? Okay. I got there at 5 p.m., but we didn't start until 7 p.m., and we had to do the whole play twice, so I put my makeup on twice to see what I would look like. Ugh, I just got home. It's midnight. I'm really tired, but that's acting.
Well, the thing that being in the play did is it made me go to school because I had to participate after school and I had to take the class during school, and I integrated a little bit better with the kids and I was friends with all the leads, and I had a dual role. So I got to be on stage a ton and the play's hilarious. My picture was in the paper, like really nothing can go wrong.
March 19th, Thursday, opening night. It went just okay. The audience was really quiet, and they didn't laugh at anything. Maybe it's because there were a lot of mistakes. March 22nd, Sunday. My sisters and I spent time with Dad before he went back to San Diego, and I was really sad when he left. Went to the stationery store, and I stole a new address book today. I needed one. March 23rd. Journal, oh my God, a review for The Butler Did It came out in the newspaper today.
The play was incredible and was so funny and so good. And then I crack open the paper and my picture's in the paper and there's this huge like full page review. So how exciting is that? Yeah, like everyone was gonna read this. The school, the teachers, the admin, everybody at church. I was kind of excited to clip it and send it to, family and all my friends back home, that kind of thing.
All right, so this is a high school play. Let's just get started right there. This is a high school play and they ran a full page review of this play. I mean, right away it looks great. Until you read the title of the review. If the butler did it, he should have been fired. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the city paper sent a full-on professional reviewer to see a bunch of 15-year-olds and just really lay into them. by Charles Hewitt, theater reviewer. Last Thursday, South Tahoe High School presented The Butler Did It, a sad piece of theater directed by Linda Babich, our English teacher. A volunteer. Not an original plot. I believe I watched something like it on TV with Peter Falk not too long ago. The play takes established characters from various detective novels and tries to bring them to life on stage. We didn't write this play, okay? This production needed those dangling microphones I complained about in past productions, as the players did not project well. I had to move towards the front 3 times to hear the dialogue without straining. This poor man. A couple of sloppy corners to The Butler Did It included the feet and the legs that could be seen protruding beyond the curtain. The best portrayal of a character was that of Mitch Della Russo as Chandler Marlowe. He came on strong and he maintained his character to the end. As for Rick and Laura Carlisle, Mary Hitchcock, who played Laura, is a stately blonde with a model's flair for wearing clothes. She was 16. 16 years old, high school. But now we're at my part, so it's the important part now. Okay. Her characterization was stronger than that of her husband, Rick Carlisle, played a bit too fey by Bill Seymour, who also took a double role as Rick's twin brother. Huh. March 24th. Today I went to the library and I looked up the word fey in the dictionary. Fey, adjective, A, exaggerated effeminate mannerisms exhibited especially by homosexuals. B, a man who places particular importance on physical appearance and the cultivation of the leisurely hobbies of a gay man. C, fated to die, doomed, and marked by a foreboding of death. Oh my God, journal! I am so upset. First, everyone's school is calling me a fag, and now the city newspaper just called me gay, too. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. March 25th. I stole 3 hermit crabs at the store today. I don't know why. March 26th. I cut school today and yesterday, and I stayed in my room. I don't want to see anyone that might have read the newspaper. Mom hasn't said anything. I don't think she reads the newspaper. Okay, so I basically, I was already cutting school anyway, so I just went right back to it, and I cut school for a couple of weeks, and really nobody said much. But a couple of months later, I got invited to see my mom's boss to go to Seattle and see Liza Minnelli in concert. And I went, and I got invited backstage, and I went to see her, and I said, oh my God, so good to see you, and all of that. And then I said, so hey, I did a play. And I got a really bad review. And because I guess in my mind, I thought that she'd read it, because she's totally up on the Tahoe Tribune. And of course, she had no clue and not read it. What I love about what Liza did was she interrupted me. She said, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the details of this review. It doesn't matter. She said, well, what did you think? And of course, I thought it was incredible. I thought it was so good. And she said that that was all that matters. And I got home that night, and I opened my journal, and I wrote a review of her show. And here it is. I saw Liza M. in Seattle, live in concert. Wonderful.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know.
As always, all the childhood writings heard in today's episode are shared with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. And this concludes our episode. And when the reviews are in, we hope you won't say this on our Facebook page.
Guess he doesn't like you anymore.
Lucky for us, the reviews are in for our new book, My Mortified Life, A Guided Journal. And the critics totally like us. Find out why Refinery29 named My Mortified Life one of the best books to give this holiday season. With 200 pages of thought-provoking and hilarious writing exercises that dare you to dig up your awkward teenage memories. If you know someone who loves to journal, they will love spilling their guts in the pages of My Mortified Life. It's the journal you wish you had growing up. Find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite indie bookstore. Just don't tell
Charles Hewitt, theater reviewer.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, you might enjoy other episodes that pair well, including episode 39, where a teenage girl writes a thriller that's loosely inspired by one of the most critically savage films of all time, Showgirls, featuring a guest appearance from Alison Brie. To share the shame, follow us on Facebook or Instagram, or visit getmortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode. The Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. And if your company would like to support our podcast, we'd love that. Email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. And thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Katie McMurrin.
Brilliant.
Hadley Dion.
Breathtaking.
Dave Nadelberg.
Washed up.
And myself, Neil Catcher.
Oh, is that the host?
Leonard Hyman produced these stories for the stage.
Genius.
Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake, Snake, Snakes.
Horrifying.
Additional thanks to Lance Roberts Studios and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived. Even when...
The city newspaper just called me gay too! Oh my God!